Get road trip ready with a service checkup at your local Chevy dealer. They can save you time and money and get the job done right the first time, worry-free. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for current service specials or to schedule a test drive.
Some of you may know that I grew up in a family business run by my dad, a grocery store, but it had a butcher shop. It was known far and wide on the southwest side, and I know that quality means something, and that's why we drive 2 hours from northwest Indiana all the way to the northwest side of the city of Chicago to Joseph's Finest Meats at 7101 West Addison Street. Before you go there, you got to be prepared, so I've got a list for you. Do you have a pen? Italian sausage, hot. Italian sausage, mild. Get pork chops, but order them thick. And of course, get some beef too, like bone-in ribeye steaks. Nothing like it. And if you don't know exactly what to get or how to cook it, ask Ben or Sal and tell them John Cass sang. And I'd like to tip my hat to Joseph, the patriarch, the owner, the founder who built this store for his family with his two sons, Ben and Sal. In his mid-90s, he had serious heart surgery and he made a triumphant return. He loves his place, and I do too. And so does anyone who shops there. It's like family. They care about the details. They care about you. Joseph's Finest Meats, 7101 West Addison Street, Chicago. A family tradition since 1977, and a proud sponsor of John Cass News and the Chicago Way podcast. With the newspapers falling apart in Chicago, there are websites that you can go to for common sense and good news. One of them is CWB Chicago. They are transparent and they report on what the news is out of the courts. They had a headline the other day. Two bar groups want to oust recalled Cook County judge over column and podcast. The judge is Judge James R. Brown, who was among seven retired circuit court judges from Will, Pope, and Cook counties who was recalled last month. Recalled back to the bench to address a shortage of judges in Cook County. He's always been highly rated. He's always been a man of common sense. He served as a judge for 18 years, spending most of that time setting bail for newly charged defendants and handling pretrial issues. That's when I met him. I was writing about this phenomenon that we see in Cook County where judges are releasing people who shouldn't be released and are released so they attack other innocent people, like that girl, Bethany McGee, who was burned alive on the CTA, or many, many others. And the Cook County Bar Association and the Chicago Council of Lawyers came down, filled themselves up with hot air, and tried to come down on Judge Brown and shut him up. They gave the old standby, and anyone who grew up in Chicago knows it. The old standby is shut up and take it. That's what the machine says. Now, Judge Brown wrote a column for me, man of common sense, talking about the predisposition of judges who were letting people out that they knew were posing a threat. And they did pose a threat. As Bethany McGee, to talk about this, I've asked a man with incredible common sense and political savvy in these matters of dealing with judges. His name is Tom Serafin of Serafin & Associates, and he's going to talk to us about this, Judge Brown and so forth. Also with me, as always, is my good friend, co-host here, Jeff Carlin, and I'm John Cass, editor of John Cass News, where you always get a good cup of common sense. And where are you as judges like James Brown are being told to shut up and take it by the Pharisees of the Chicago lawyers in the Cook County Bar on behalf of the political hacks who don't want to hear what they have to say? The political hacks, in my mind, my opinion, are Tony Preckwinkle and Governor Pritzker. And where are you as tragedy strikes in Minnesota, as sadness engulfs our friends in Green Bay? You're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
I showered and everything for this. I want you to know this.
Tab, you can kill your video because my bandwidth is kind of low. So
okay.
It slows me down a little bit.
Hang on, I got to find it.
Your bandwidth has always been low. Okay.
Yeah.
Ooh.
All right.
You'll be here all week.
Yes.
Performing in a lunchroom near you, right? Okay, we're ready? All right. Well, as promised, our guest is Tom Serafin of Serafin and Associates. Now, what is it called now, Tom?
Now, Mercury, Illinois. Mercury Public Affairs, Mercury, Illinois. They're a national firm.
Yeah.
And Sherry Bustos, who is a former congresswoman from the Rock Island area, the Quad Cities. And she started the firm here in the city by opening up a local office here. They have offices all, in the big cities around the country. She opened the Chicago office. And she asked me to join her about a year and a half ago, and it took me a while to get my act together. And now we're officially one operation, Mercury, Illinois. They were kind enough to move into my offices over on Huron Street, where I had been since 85, I think. I mean, I've been there a long time.
Hence the short walk to the steakhouse. What is it? Erie Cafe, right?
Erie Cafe. Good bunch of guys that work there, great bartenders, pouring honest drink, and the food is good. Yeah, the food is very good.
Your cafe, yeah. And Sherry Bustos is an experienced public affairs person. She knows the politics of Illinois and Chicago, and she seems reasonable.
She is. You're right about that, John. In her district, Donald Trump won her district when she was running for Congress, and he won it three times, and she won it the same three times. So as a Democrat, she was elected in the same congressional district that those voters voted for a Republican presidential candidate. So she's always been kind of a moderate, Hubert Humphrey, Kennedy type Democrat. And she stood out that way. A lot of rural areas in her particular area of the world. Straightforward, right down the middle, which is kind of cool. You don't see that too often.
Well, yes. And she's a very impressive person, and I'm glad to know her through you, but I have a question.
Yes. I'm listening, boss.
All right. I have a question. I'm going to ask it and be straightforward about it.
You sound like my wife.
Judge, I don't know who these Pharisees are that are going around telling Judge James Brown, you can't write for John Cass, and we're going to hound you. The hellhounds are after you, and they're going to destroy him. Who are these people?
I don't understand. Unfortunately, the Cook County Bar has never been, and the Cook County judges have never been very distinguished in the world of the judicial branch. Unfortunately, I actually represented the Supreme Court Chief Justice Judge Heupel during the Baby Richard hearings, and he was a brilliant legal scholar, And he had been railroaded by some of the enemies that didn't like the judgment that he wrote. But here's the interesting thing behind the Baby Richard case, which was a case where the parental rights of a dad were being reclaimed by him. And it was a unanimous Supreme Court decision, unanimous. And one of the judges who was scheduled to write that unanimous decision had a boat down in Florida and had a girlfriend he wanted to go meet down there. And he said to Judge Heupel, Judge, give me a break. I'll write the next two for you. If you could just cover this one for me. It's unanimous. Everybody's on board with this. And Judge Heupel said, sure. He's one of those, you know, he's a downstate guy. He's from Peoria. He just said, sure, I'll write it. He wrote it. And the Chicago Tribune and everybody else that could write an opinion piece were after him for taking the child away from the adopted parents and giving them back to the real parents. Well, and
they're the real biological parents of Baby Richards. That is their baby. And
right.
There was a lot of histrionics in that courtroom. I mean, around that decision. I mean, it was almost like the same type of histrionics we're seeing with the unfortunate killing of that woman in Minnesota, screaming and crying, and all the people who's leading it. Bob Green of the Chicago Tribune was capitalizing on the anxiety because women were having difficulties having children at the time. That was a built-in constituency for Bob. All the anxiety of not being able to have a child, and it became a circus act where this poor judge was destroyed in the court of public opinion. It was just sickening, Tom. I'm glad you supported him and tried to protect him.
He hired Governor Jim Thompson to be his attorney and hired me to help him communicate for him, and I learned a good deal. I mean, a great deal being up there in the Supreme Court chambers, listening to the various different judges in the kitchen, you know, at a dinner table arguing about different cases. And I fell in love with the law at that time. And it was remarkable. And also was the first time I had ever seen Governor Thompson in an editorial session by himself without a lot of aides. We went to the Chicago Defender editorial board. Mr. Sengstad and, you know, all the gentlemen dressed up in their three-piece suits around this large oak table in that beautiful Chicago Defender office. And he was the most remarkable and intelligent conversation I had ever seen in an ed board session. And it was convincing to the editorial board that they came out and, you know, in support of Judge Heupel during his impeachment hearings that had been put together by Mike Madigan, the Speaker of the House, and was going on in Springfield at the time. We didn't have the votes to win that until after we went to the Ed Board at the Chicago Defender. And the interesting thing, again, you asked me about these judges and what they're saying about one of your contributors to your columns. It makes no sense, no rational sense. Two of the judges on the Supreme Court that voted in favor of the unanimous court decision said before this tribunal, you know, the legislative panel in Springfield at the time, that because of what the Chicago Tribune had been writing, they probably would change their vote today. And I never heard a judge say anywhere that because of public right, that they would. So you know, unfortunately, we've never had a real, you know, distinguished, you know, Bob Thomas, who I loved. He was a great kicker for the Chicago Bears. He campaigned for the Supreme Court, and he kind of broke that red line when he went out and started talking about abortion.
Right.
He was pro-life at the time. And at one time, you never would talk about issues if you were campaigning. You can talk about issues if you're a seated judge and you can explain your rationale and, you know, you're careful about that, but you stay within the margins. But, you know, I picked up the Skyline publication in my hallway of my apartment building yesterday. And there's a front page story about a man attacking and robbing a pregnant woman in the Loop while on electronic monitoring. Okay. He's a convicted felon, been before the judges over and over again. And the state's attorney said, please don't let him out again. But Judge Susan Ortiz said he can go. And just put a monitoring thing on him again. I mean, Judge Charles Burns said, hey, you know, this guy has violated these rules over and over again. He's not reporting. You really can't do that. So, we elect judges here. And it's really one of the guys told me a long time ago in the 80s, you know, when he was leaving Congress, quitting the congressional staff. At the time, and I was on the Senate to staff of Alan Dixon's. I said, what are you going to do? He said, I'm going to try to become a judge. It's the best job in Chicago town. You work 10 to 2. You go golfing all the time. You good money. You can retire. I never heard anybody talk about being a judge and a judge like that. So unfortunately, I think it's ridiculous. I think it lacks the intelligence to even want to discuss it. And it's First Amendment, and we need more judges to speak louder about what is and isn't working in our system today, and less of the herd mentality that we have right now.
I know two things to be true. One is that subscribers to John Cass News have access to a good cup of common sense. And to go with that cup of common sense is the perfect cup of coffee. Ribby Coffee. It's never bitter, air roasted, and customized. It's the best coffee around. RibbyCoffee.com. That's RibbyCoffee.com. If you're near Forest Park or Oak Park, be sure to stop by one of the Cribby Cafes where you can order ahead and earn points on the easy to use Cribby Coffee app. Yeah, there's an app. The Cribby Coffee app makes it easy to get your favorite air-roasted coffee faster than ever. Earn points on every purchase toward free drinks and freshly roasted coffee. Customize your order, pay with Google Pay or Apple Pay, and skip a line. Your daily coffee just got a whole lot smoother. Of course, if you can't make it to the cafe, you can always order your favorite air-roasted coffee sent directly to your door. My favorite is the Mount Oku from Cameroon. You pick the beans, you customize the roast and the grind, and they send it right to your door. Want Cribby Roast delivered on your schedule? Subscribe to save 15% on your first order and 10% on every refill. Did I mention they offer K-Cups too? Ribby Coffee. RibbyCoffee.com. That's RibbyCoffee.com. Proud sponsor of John Cass News and the Chicago Way podcast. Cheers. We are talking to Tom Serafin, longtime political analyst and longtime, what do I call you, man? You're one of my best friends. You're a good man.
Yeah, the guy who saved my first turkey barbecue 30 years ago. I was trying to follow when you were calling how to cook a turkey.
I had to wake you up. I came.
I need the story. Come on, let's start at the beginning. Let's rack this one up for me, Tom.
So, John writes about chickens and how you do
your chicken. Yeah. I was in over at Joseph's Finest Meats the other day, and some guy was talking about it.
So he's fixing, you know, our kids went to preschool together, and we both lived in the western suburbs. We knew each other more as guys, and we got to know each other as colleagues, professional colleagues. And he was telling me how you put the turkey on a Weber grill, and you know, it becomes so juicy, and it's wonderful, and how you have to take care of it, and you have to, you know, put stuff on it all over the place. And I wrote it down, and I kind of lost those notes of mine, and I called him up and said, I'm going to do this. He said, well, do this, or do that. And I guess he could tell that I was a little bit tentative. So my wife was gone with the kids somewhere. And so I put the turkey on the outside, you know, a porch in the back porch. And I kind of, you know, laid down or sat down on the couch, and I kind of fell asleep.
You rested your eyes.
And of course, you can't do that if you're cooking, no. You know. And so
here comes the manic The manic cook knocking on his door. Are you awake?
Castle. Yeah. Just like this song, Castle. He's knocking on the door, on the back door. And I look at, oh my God, it's the chef. I open the door. He says, what are you doing? You know, you're going to ruin the turkey. So I said, okay. And ever since then, I've cooked the turkeys. Even some days when we had all the family over, I cooked two turkeys. And Ann will tell you, my wife will tell you that those turkeys, the best turkeys we've ever had. I mean, the white meat is moist. It's tasteful. The best thing I ever did, John, is put it on a Weber grill. We've never done a turkey any other way except on a Weber grill.
It's the only way to do it. Now that we have Joseph's Finest Meats as our sponsor, they have the fresh turkeys, Jeff. Carlin, you know that.
Yes, the Yorty turkeys. Yorty. Fantastic.
But here's the thing, Tom. I'm glad the turkey worked out and all the family enjoyed the leftovers, etc. But I'm a little upset about Chicago Council of Lawyers and the Cook County Bar Association telling a good judge who was retained and endorsed by all these blue ribbon groups to shut his mouth. How dare you talk to John Cass? How dare you speak to, what is it, truth to power? Remember how all these lefties always say that? But they can't handle it when it's real. Here's a judge who was complaining about a move that was going on in Cook County courts to release repeat violent offenders from jail and release them onto the populace. And this judge, Jim Brown, was concerned about the people that would be victimized by these repeat violent offenders. And the Pharisees of the bar associations, probably working on behalf of Tony Preckwinkle and Governor Pritzker, were trying to shut him up. And I don't understand how they could do that. The column that he wrote was, "His judgment cometh, and that right soon." It was in John Cass News, and I recommend it highly to everyone, and I'll write about it again once we get done talking about this. But I don't know what happens when you've got a bunch of lawyers taking orders from political hacks, trying to silence a good judge, and all his concern was about the people in those neighborhoods who would be attacked by, as we know, evidence tells us, it's not John Cass of the Western Suburbs or Western Springs who gets attacked. It's some poor Black or Latino lady in the neighborhoods where these offenders are released into that are attacked. I'm in Northwest Indiana now. I'm living large. The judge in the column referred to a Supreme Court nominee who could not articulate the definition of woman at her confirmation hearing. I heard that. I saw it. So did the rest of the country. And they are telling this judge, keep your mouth shut. Shut up and take. Now, Tom Serafin, you are, and Jeff Carlin, you guys are men of common sense. What say you?
Well, thank you for that compliment, common sense. I had to go back to the January 7th to 13th edition of CWB Chicago. The headline is "Man Attacked, Robbed Pregnant Woman in the Loop While on Electronic Monitoring." A convicted felon who attacked and robbed a pregnant woman inside a CTA station in the Loop was on electronic monitoring at the time of the crime, despite warnings to a Cook County judge that the man was violating these stay-at-home orders, according to court records. We need judges to be strong, forceful, and to believe in the law. I learned a lot about the law, as I said, when I worked for Judge Heupel for a long time, and we were good friends forever after that. And you can do so much with the law and the Constitution and all those legislative laws that have been written over the last 250 years. There's so much there to work with, but you have to articulate what that law is and what that law means. And that's what this judge was doing, writing columns in your newspaper. The key is you have to be able to speak it, understand it, and teach it. I've always believed that politicians should be educators. Absolutely. I don't know if an educator should be a politician, but you politicians should be educators. They should be teaching. Judges should be teaching us how to obey the law, and we need to understand the law in order to obey it. And that's what a society is put together for. We have a lot of room at county jail right now. We have a lot of room and a lot of people, electronic monitoring, surveillance, and reports and all those things. But the job is not getting done, so we keep silence and we walk around with our hands over our eyes and over our lips and over our ears. Right. We can't do that. So I think on this one, the bar is absolutely wrong. In fact, we should hear more from the bar. We should hear more about what's not getting done properly. And I thought when this there's a new head judge over there now,
a good man. And
they say they're going to continue to study the electronic monitoring. I don't think you have to study it. I just think you have to look at the reports and look at the poor victims. Guy told me this a long time ago. You know, I was a bartender. And you'd always have to be careful. You're serving somebody who was drinking too much and getting rowdy. You'd have to, you know, be polite, but you have to cut them off. And you're responsible now. If you know somebody is drunk, you send them all those booze and all that drink, and they go out and kill somebody in their car, you could be held responsible. But the judges who allow these people that have felon after felon after felon back on the street, and they go out and rape and kill, pillage, that judge is not responsible. I understand why you can't hold them responsible. I understand the rationale for that.
Yeah.
But somebody needs to be speaking to those judges and teaching them what's going on in the world around us. We can't always be golfing.
It's no surprise to anyone who's followed Chicago politics or the history, but yes, Chicago judges are not generally, historically speaking, known to be always above board. And I mean, and some of that comes from the whole system, right, Tom? I mean, the idea of getting elected means that you're going to be indebted to somebody. No one gets elected alone. And so there's this kind of push and pull. Well, what's good for me? What's good for the public? And as you alluded to a story earlier, it seems like some judges that who do it for the wrong reasons. And this is what we're seeing. You know, we're reaping that. There's no way anybody could look at what Judge Brown said and say, well, that was, you know, that's he should be taken out back and removed from civil society. That's just crazy. There's just an ulterior motive there.
And how dare you talk to John Cass, of all people?
If you had been still on those vessels when you were in the Merchant Marines, you know, there might have been good cause for that not to talk to you on those long journeys. But you know, in this particular situation, I was in the seminary, and we used to study Latin and Greek. We had 2 hours of Latin a day, one in the morning and one in the late afternoon, and then 45 minutes of Greek in midday. And there was a lot of stories about justice and reading the interpretations and then understanding the language and the words of the time. And my instructors, the professors, many of them were the priests, the Catholic Church, and they would go through why these judgments worked and why they didn't work and where they came from and what ancient historical civilization, you know, started with that, whether and if the teachings came from Aristotle or Plato or wherever. Thomas Aquinas was a wonderful writer, and my goodness, what a mind, St. Thomas Aquinas.
Right.
And I think it's important for us because of our education system is so negligent in teaching civics and law and order and understanding how cultures and civilizations work, that we have people of responsibility like judges that sit literally on a pedestal when you walk in and see them, that you understand what they're saying, and they need to make sure we understand what they're doing and why they're doing it. And so when you see the bar say what they're saying about silencing one of their judges for doing exactly that, I think it's absurd. It shows the smallness of their thinking, the narrowness of their minds. And it really, you know, it should awaken everybody as to trying to figure out how we get better in our society and culture of teaching our young people and others all about the law and how it's applied and why it's applied and where it should be applied and who should be applying it. Well, we need to get smarter. We need to get smarter there.
Yeah.
Well said, Tom. Judge Brown is a good guy. Okay. If you met him, you know, he's a Southsider. I'm a Southsider. I guess we have that in common. And I liked him from the beginning because I called him up. I forgot what it was. It was a story. I had been writing columns about the Preckwinkle policy of letting violent criminals out of Cook County Jail because she was getting credit for it. And Pritzker was, of course, applauding himself as he always does. And these people were victims. They weren't the awfuls and angry white female leftists with money in Western Springs. They were minority women who had to take the CTA because they didn't have money. And no one wants to take the CTA, whether you have money or not. And the people who do are forced to keep looking over the shoulder for the next madman to come by with a can of gasoline and burn them. I guess I'm talking out of column now. That's okay, right?
Well, you know, on the CTA, that's a good point. I mean, and probably deviate from the subject for a minute. I sat at a dinner seated next to a wonderful right alderwoman from the north side, and I didn't know her that well, and we just, you know, talked about a lot of things. And I talked about the CTA and other things, and she said she advises her daughter, when her daughter takes the CTA, to go to the front car because you're closest to the operator of that train.
Right.
And if there is a problem, that operator could probably do something to help. But not to get on any other car, especially at night, if you aren't close to the front car or the operator. Some good advice from someone who knows better. People understand the problems with the CTA, you know, especially after hours. But getting back to the judge's situation, your instincts are correct. And, you know, your instincts have always been pretty good about this kind of thing. But, you know, there are good judges, yeah, very good judges in our system. You know, I would say 75%, 80%, you know, there are a lot of good judges. Judge Ray Mitchell is an old buddy.
Right.
And Judge Liam Brennan out there in DuPage County. There are some really fine judges that they take their work very, very seriously. But, you know, politics is in everybody's blood in Illinois. There isn't a judge. I shouldn't say that. I should say 85% of all the judges, especially in Cook County, have been touched by the Democratic Party in some capacity. You know, Mike Madigan and before him, Alderman Ed Burke, they touched about every judge in the world. So, you know, we're all politics. We're all politicians in some way in life. Some are professional and get paid for it. Others of us, you know, are good, play good politics in our offices and try to stay out of trouble and all those kinds of things. But when you start dealing with the law is right there. It's really clean. It's easy to read, easy to understand. And people have been writing about the law and the statutes of the law in Illinois and our great U.S. Constitution for 250 years. And we're celebrating that 250 years this year. So there's so much there if you want to be a great judge to learn and study and then speak to the people that you may eventually sit in judgment and let them know. I mean, we had two cops that used to walk the neighborhood in Milwaukee, you know, by the train tracks where we were all the time. And those guys, you know, picked us up two or three times, my brother and I, and they brought us home. They put us one day in one of those walk-in cells in their office just to scare the shit out of us. Excuse me. And they did, but they took us home. I mean, they were sitting in judgment in what they did, but they understood that my dad was terrible. It was terrible. Go home at 2 o'clock in the morning and have him answer the door, 6'4", 250. He was not happy. But they understood where judgment can be very, very, very important and remembered.
That's common sense.
Yeah.
It's common sense for the coppers to, you know, let you guys sit in the cell for a little bit.
Right. I mean, you don't always get that anymore.
Right.
But they gave us a bologna sandwich. I'll never forget it. You know, it was Wonder Bread with a slice of bologna. You know, that
was it. And mustard.
There's mayonnaise, nothing. No, there's nothing. Oh no, this is a bologna.
Please, sandwich. Sir, may I have some more?
Those were the days. But you know, I'm talking to you now. I'm in my 70s. I'm telling you all about it. I mean, it made it indented an imprint on my mind. Well, so,
but you know, I would take a slice of onion, mustard, and say goodbye. But we have other things to talk about besides all the publicity I'm getting by these Pharisees from Tony Preckwinkle and
John. And let me just add a point there. You talk about the publicity. Yeah. You know, I first of all, if you do write a column, I might suggest you put a paragraph or two in there and you thank everybody for pointing out the wisdom of your guest columnist and also the reach of your organization, your publication today. You've done a heck of a job, and your reach might be larger than, you know, one of the newspapers today as far as your readership is concerned. And the fact that they would, you know, point you out suggests that you might be, you might be out front of everybody on issues like this. So well, you might want to be, at some point, you know, appreciative and offer them, maybe a 2-year discount for signing up to read.
And if anyone wants to write for John Cass News, you don't have to be a judge. You don't have to be a prosecutor. You could be like a regular guy like Tom Serafin, who has written for John Cass News. I'm waiting for Jeff Carlin's column. Never sent it.
What?
Yeah.
What?
But
ambush me much, but John.
Physics.
Right? Yeah.
Well, look for a science column coming soon. I got a science newsletter I'm working up for you, John.
There you go.
You know, my son's company just he built 11 satellites that just launched yesterday, and he sent me a video of one of the satellites being deployed over Earth, and nice. He was motivated by his junior high school professor in physics, and it went from there to rockets. You know, he's a rocket scientist, but when you said you were going to do that, I thought to myself, my goodness, the impression you're going to make and the lives you're going to change for the better is going to be immense. So it would be cool to read your column.
Oh, Jeff teaching. Yeah.
Yes. I will definitely. I promise, John, my first day in classroom, I will write in a column about that for sure.
Jeff teaching physics. I love it. Listen, I also want to ask Tom and Jeff about one of the subjects that's percolating right now. Somehow my friends on the left, who were all about freedom of speech back in the day, are no longer. And we're seeing, in my view, and I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think I am, I'm seeing a politics being built which is very similar to the Southern nullificationists like John C. Calhoun, the big slaver, because we're telling law enforcement that they can no longer uphold the law that was written and established by Congress. In Minnesota, I'm seeing it all over, but in Minnesota, it's all screwed up, and I wondered what you guys thought of it.
Well, it's a sorry situation. My attitude is that when you see the numbers of the demonstrators and the issue that they're demonstrating, you know, we grew up with all of that in the 60s. Yeah. So we're somewhat used to the opportunity and the constitutional right to go out there and protest. But there, you know, when you know, you look at the history of the United States, where there have been states that and segments of population from different states, especially the South, you know, during the civil rights issues, where they refused to listen to the federal law, refused to listen to the federal authorities, and they were eventually dealt with appropriately.
By the National Guard, activated by the President of the United States, Dwight D. Eisenhower, John Kennedy, and others.
Right, right. So those things, to me, are kind of, when you look at the history of the United States, the enforcement of the federal law, because we are a republic, I mean, that is, you know, to me, okay, that's what should be done. It's the issue itself that disturbs me, because we are creating through, you know, social media and television this hatred of each other, which is so unnecessary. We can disagree, but we shouldn't be hating each other or hating on each other. That's the terrible part of this whole thing. I mean, that part, you know, is disturbing, because you don't know somebody, mm-hmm. and they believe one thing and you believe something else. But why would you hate each other? Because you might have so much more in common. That part bothers me. And you know what? You know, January 6th, there was a when they had the DC thing, you know, years ago, there was a federal officer in plain clothes. It was there to protect the members of the House of Representatives and Senate. And he pulled a gun, and through a broken glass, there's a young lady who was trying to jump through the window or whatever. And she was unarmed, but he shot her.
Now, a military veteran.
Yeah, and he was in a position where he was had to do something. He felt he had to do something, and he reacted based on his instincts and his training and what he thought was going on around him at the time. And it turned out that, you know, she was 5 foot. I mean, her size was
Ashley
immaterial, but
right.
Yeah, Ashley Babbitt. And then we have this thing again in the month of January that occurred in Minnesota. And this guy who had been through these situations before and actually had been dragged by a car before instinctively pulled out his gun and pulled his camera down with his left hand and reacted, you know, immediately. I mean, there was no hesitation on his part. So, you know, they both felt threatened in different situations. Both of them were federal officers of the federal government in situations where they thought they were upholding the law.
But the difference is the left ignored the shooting of Ashley Babbitt and have embraced the shooting of this poor woman from Minnesota. And I don't understand why, except that they don't want the laws enforced. They don't want immigration law enforced, and they feel they can stop the enforcement. I would very much like if they went to Congress and say, we're going to change the law because we don't like the law. But that's not what they're doing. Right, Jeff.
But this is the problem this country's been you know dealing with for at least the last 10 years. You know, this social media echo chamber system that people fall into, people like an Ashley Babbitt or Miss Good in Minneapolis, and they feel activated, and their activation leads them to, I mean, violence. I mean, busting through a window is violence. Driving a cop, driving your car into a police situation is violence. I mean, you're driving a weapon, and you're, you know, whatever it is. Both of those things are activated by something else. These people didn't wake up and all of a sudden become people who wanted to do this. There was an encouragement pipeline. And I think, as we've talked about kind of earlier, you know, we've got judges who need to help educate people and the populace about the laws and what's right and what's wrong and how justice should be dealt. And we need people to teach each other about your social media and an echo chamber and the danger of not trying to have a balanced take on the world and what we try to do to an extent here in Chicago, you know, Chicago ways to do that, to be moderate. And I know, Tom, I don't want to speak for you, but I know you're a moderate in the same sense. And I think John would agree with us that, that there's a middle ground here that most of us live in and are appalled by both these things and are appalled that we've gotten to this point. But it doesn't seem like there's any will from anyone on the left or the right, especially the left, because they control a lot of the media out there, to not reinforce these crazy narratives that are, you know, bubbling up on social media and are activating people. And it's just, it just crushes me when I see people in my own family who are just misinformed and or are, you know, angsty about things that are not true or are tilted in a way to make them that way and kind of reinforce that negative feedback loop. And I just don't know what we do other than, like, you know, Tom alluded to, we find some source to start educating people about the danger of not seeing people as humans. We have all have more in common than we don't.
Well said. Hard to add to that. I mean,
right. Who wants to that? I don't.
You know, no, I mean, that's, you know, that's well said. You know, and what really troubles me is that I was fortunate when we had our children. You know, the telephone was just beginning to, cell phones were just beginning to be, you know, in the mid to late 90s out there everywhere.
That's my generation. Yeah,
our kids did not grow up with cell phones,
right?
And internet. They were the last generation born in the 90s. The last group,
right? They read a lot of books. You know, no TV and no cell phones, and they read a lot of books. And eventually, you know, the world pulled them into the world of you know, Game Boys and computers and everything else. But they still had that. They still had that foundation where you could read and understand more of what's going on in the world today. And it's what you see on your telephone is really is like reading one page in a book and saying you understood what the book was all about. You know, it doesn't, you know, it's just odd as hell.
Tom, you talked about like my generation, because I was born in 80, you know, or very early part of the 80s. So I grew up in that, you know, analog to digital switch.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you guys a question. Back in that era, you had media controls around the TV, around radio, around print, and those things that, you know, evaporated when the digital era started. So should we try to recreate that, or is the cat out of the bag and we're never going to get there? Because I feel like that was an era.
What kind of controls are you speaking
well
about?
in, you know, I have a degree in broadcasting, and you had the government could come down on you if you broadcast something on TV, broadcast something on radio, put something in print that ran afoul of standards. Right. There's balanced standards. And a lot of them have been kind of weakened over there and tested, but they were still intact. And technically you could be enforced heavily. And they have. I mean, you look at the famous Super Bowl issue with Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson. You know, that fine from that came from that. They wrote those laws and changed it again to make it really easy for them to fine you for indecency or doing things of that nature. And so those controls were in place, and most people could only get media that was either print from a newspaper or a magazine or from radio or from TV. There was no really other way to get information, you know, other than word of mouth, right? Drinking at the bar. So your information was controlled in a sense, but it was seemed very balanced for most people would say. There was the ability to hold people accountable if things ran afoul, to complain. But in the internet age and the digital age, that's, you know, completely on. There is no recourse there really at all. Other than, you know, public opinion, do we try to come up with a way to put those guardrails back in place to kind of tamp down this silo effect that we've kind of talked about that really doesn't cause any good? I've yet to see a positive situation where, you know, an echo chamber that someone's fallen into because of an algorithm on their social media has been a great thing, you know, for the world. So that's kind of my question, as someone who's grown up in that, was born in the early 80s and it was, you know, developing in this analog to digital, you know, shift, and then has a degree in radio and been broadcasting. That's where I was kind of like, oh God, we're screwed.
Well, you know, the horses are out of the barn. No, you can't go back. Number one. But number two, you got to, if you go back and read about the Industrial Revolution, and how it changed, you know, the printing press and everything, and you know, Edison, and you remember how quickly, you know, over a decade or two or three, that, you know, things completely changed in how we went about and doing what we currently do on a daily basis. That took a little time, but they called the Industrial Revolution. We're going through a communications revolution. The difference is the rate of speed is 10 times what the Industrial Revolution was. Yeah. So we're moving so quickly. We're beyond the understanding and human comprehension on how we're always going to be playing catch up unless you start out ahead of the pack. So you're in physics, so you understand exactly what you need to be able to be thinking about and reading and doing. I just had a conversation with my son over this weekend where he has opportunities, you know, in other walks of life. And I said, you have to master the future. And the only way you can do that is to study, read, and be accomplished in what is happening. Have to be out ahead of things. AI, I call it A1 because of the steak sauce, but it's changing everything. And everything that is being applied to is going to be changing. I just read a column the other day by a physician who talked about robots doing almost all of the surgery in 3 years and using all the intelligence from all the previous surgeries. If you're doing a gallbladder surgery, they would have the ability to bring all the gallbladder surgeries that have been placed in their brains in these humanoid robots so that they can handle a precision instrument inside a person's body and remove that gallbladder and be prepared for every kind of situation and recognize whether or not there is a blood or a vessel or corpuscle or something out of whack. Mm-hmm. It's incredible what's going to be applied into the future. And when you get the quantum computer, you know all about this, you're going to be able to build medicine specifically designed for that specific human being. So, you know, just like in johncastnews.com, John left the Tribune, took his buyout and said, goodbye, guys, on Friday. And Monday, he was writing columns for 40, 50,000 people again and under his own banner. He didn't waste a day. He didn't waste a minute. And if you're going to be in the world of communications today, you have to be out ahead of it, in front of it. You know, I remember when the fax machine came out. I thought, oh boy, this is great. I can get right into the newsroom with this. You know, before we had to write letters and make phone calls and go to City News Bureau, we were having, but then the fax machine and then the computers came in. So, whoa, wow, I'm going to get all these domains. And then, you know, you continue, the phone came in. Oh God, I can call anybody anywhere. I can do anything, you know, from the bus anywhere. So, the horses are out of the barn. And, you know, if you look through life, government is always in a reactive mode to deal with problems of society. The society and the science of getting along and culture has changed so quickly that, you know, political people, especially today's caliber of the intelligent quotient, they're always going to be on the backside. They're never going to be on the front side. And that's where you get all the angst, because problems will have been occurring and people will try to solve them. And you have 10 people at the table, you have no leader. And the beauty about what we are as a country is that we have a foundation. And that foundation should provide us the guidance, the compass, yeah, to understand the laws on the books and understand what we need to do. And if you have criminals that have been, yeah, in front of judges 50 times for felons, they shouldn't be back on the street. That's just common sense. And to go back to the judge situation, judges need to speak to that issue. Judges need to call people out. I mean, we had a judge that just got elected.
They're afraid of their political boss. City,
yeah, but once you're a judge, you should put that aside and say, I'm sorry, Mike Madigan and Ed Burke and all those guys. I said, now I have to be a judge. I have to call it like I see it. I have to read the law and I have to follow the law. I can't bend it here. Even though there's a lot of times when you feel like you can bend it, you can't. You can't bend it. And if you want to bend it, change it in Springfield, or change it in D.C., or change it in City Hall. Organize like the people, the protesters are doing. Organize, but you know, Don't throw yourself in front of a federal officer who's on a hunt for what they think are criminals. Don't do that. You're going to get yourself hurt. We all know about that.
Well said, Tom Serafin. I have nothing to add. We started this out to talk about, you know, the Bar Association's coming down on that judge for daring to write for me. And you put a button on it. I couldn't get a tailor to put a button on it better than what you did. So thank you, buddy. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
I will say one thing. We need more speech, not less. We're not Britain. We're not Great Britain.
No, but you know, the one thing I would add, if there are any teachers listening, I would ask, try to teach more history. Try to show our young people that there is opportunity to make new laws that change the way we rule ourselves and to work within the system. You can do that and succeed. You remember Seymour Simon, Judge Seymour Simon? I mean, you know, I disagree with him a lot, but I really admired the hell out of him. I mean, I really liked Abraham Lincoln Meravitz. You know, he put me in my place a few times, but I respected him for doing that. I mean, I actually asked him if he'd support a friend of mine who was running for office. He said, "What the hell are you talking about? I'm a judge. You know, there's no politics with me." You know, of course, he was probably the most politically articulate judge I've ever met in my life.
If Richard Shea Daley asked him, maybe you'd have thought about it differently.
Yeah, right. But anyway, I mean, we need more history, more civics, you know, in our schools. Teach people how to change things and be effective at it.
As we close here, I need to reach a subject or broach a subject. What is the word?
Broach.
That is a little bit difficult for me right now. Tom Serafin is my dearest friend. He stood by me when I had the stroke and the heart attack and the quadruple bypass. He helped me through that period. He saved my business. And I want to thank him. And thanking him does not mean I'm going to shout, "I own you," off the Bears' victory of the Packers, because he grew up in Milwaukee. He loves the Packers. And I grew up in Chicago, and I love the Bears. And I'm sorry, Tom, but I have to say, I think the rivalry is over now.
No.
What do you think?
Oh, it's just
live and well.
It's been reignited. I think this rivalry now, depending on what happens this week, you know, with LaFleur up in Wisconsin, whether or not they keep him or they fire him.
Would they be stupid enough to fire him?
Well, they've got a new person running the team now, and you never know if he's
going to be. Fans own the team.
Yeah, you never know if he's going to be, you know, you don't know. You hear a lot of good stories about Story, but you don't know how he's going to manage this team. But, you know, they had their defensive line and offensive line gutted this year through injuries. I'm not making excuses, but in spite of all the problems of both teams, the Bears beat the Packers 2 out of 3 games and never led in those games until the last play.
And they never had an offensive snap with the lead and in any of those games. It's amazing.
That's amazing.
And in the second half of this last game, that the Bears trounced the Packers, and the Packers had 1 yard running in the second half. Okay, their quarterback had 300 yards and 4 touchdown passes. You can't win football that way. But what this does is put pressure on the Green Bay Packers. Caleb Williams is a quarterback that's going to make the Pro Bowl almost every year. You know, after in the next 2 years, I think he's a star, and he's going to be terrific for the city of Chicago. I think he's amazing in what he does in the fourth quarter. I think your coach is a tremendous coach, but as far as a guy, he's a dick. And your defense is going to get stronger. You need to do better with your linebackers. But hey, I think they got a shot. If you take a look at all the games this last weekend, I think you got a real shot at the Super Bowl. You're going to play the Rams. It's going to be 17 degrees out there.
Fair weather.
And this guy played for Detroit for a long time. They're a quarterback, so he understands Soldier Field. But you know what? I like the Bears, you know, at Soldier Field. I really do. And my goodness, you know, they could be going to Santa Clara, you know, in the Super Bowl.
I can't even put my arms around that. The emotional damage would be too much. I can't handle it.
What a great year. And
listen.
What a great year.
I'm in the fetal position now. Please don't bother me, please.
And you know what you have with the Bears and what you have with the Packers? You have what they don't have or they don't want in New York City. You have rugged individuals. Rugged individualism. You have the memories of Ray Nitschke and Mike Ditka. My goodness. And you want to take that away from our Packer-Bear rivalry? No way.
So, listen, the rugged individuals, we had Dick Butkus. Dick Butkus and Ray Nitschke. Okay.
Yeah.
On the Packer side. I remember reading a book, like a magazine, back in when sports magazines were full of nonsense and racism. It was like the headline, is Willie Lanier the black Ray Nitschke? You know, that kind of thing. It was ridiculous. But
yeah.
But it was thought about, and I'm thinking now, well, I'm thinking I can't take it because we used to have defense. The Packers and the Bears were about defense and the running game. And now it's like watching a video game.
Yeah.
Press the button, reset. Press the button, reset.
Right.
I can't grab onto this, man.
The first team that really, and the Bears have done it, but and the line of scrimmage is where the Bears and the Packers have always played over 100 years. That's where you win in the trenches. I remember I think it was an August game. It was one of those preseason games. The Bears were playing the Packers of all places. Horace Gregg was the coach for the Green Bay Packers, and Mike Ditka.
He hated us.
And Mike, Ditka, and those two before the game got into it, and they wanted to fight. That's where we are right now. Johnson, the coach of the Bears, you know, if you saw the handshake that he gave to LaFleur after the game, he is the winner. He is on top the turf. He's on top the North. He might be going to the Super Bowl, but that handshake was the kind of handshake that forever lives in the mind of every fan that saw that. That's not a Mike Ditka handshake. That's a chump's handshake. You're the winner.
Yeah.
Everything you said in the preseason, I'd like to beat this guy two times. Everything you said, you're on top of the hill, and you walk up to him, you shake his hand, and you say, hey, kid, you know, maybe you'll learn something from me. But no, he didn't do that. He ran up to him and barely shook the hand, ran right past him. I mean, the graciousness there, that it will be indelible. It will be bulletin board material next year. Oh, nobody will forget it forever because you're on top. And yet he decided to be a chump.
Oh man, I would never forget it. Okay. I love you, man. You're the Packer fan in my life, but when you saw that handshake, the little finger touch, whatever it was, I think I know you. And I can imagine you just gritting your teeth.
You know what? That made me want to go out and practice. Right. 2 days. I want to do it 2 days immediately. You know, I did that in high school, you know, in August when you hate it. You just hate it.
Right.
And the wind sprints and all that. Oh, boy, it was terrible. But I wanted to go out and do it immediately. And I guarantee you, everybody on that coaching staff, LaFleur's coaching staff, saw that. LaFleur saw that.
Oh, yeah.
And you just put everybody to work, and you just told everybody the next season is what we're all looking for. I mean, they're already regular. They're talking about it already.
I know, like OB would say, or Bradovich would say, he was a friend of the show, because if you need that to get yourself up, then you're not dressing up the right way. But I think it'll be fun to see where this goes for the fans.
Spoken like a Bear fan.
I'm just saying he had the opportunity to be gracious and a gentleman and act like a winner that the team is.
You mean kind of like your quarterback? I own you. I always own you. Remember that?
Yeah, that's a player. That's a player, though. We're talking about members of the upper office. You know, George McCaskey, I really liked the McCaskey family. His dad was a friend of mine. He was a great guy. He helped me out now and then. And his wife, Virginia, my goodness, class act.
I've met them both at your house at Christmas parties.
Yeah. Oh, they're classic people, great people. And I love what George did. If you saw the video of George doing a selfie with Bear fans and a Packer guy trying to get in there, he pushed them away. He did it absolutely right. George did it like a man. His coach could not shake hands like a man.
Okay.
Well, unfortunately, we strayed from politics, didn't we?
Well, all things are politics in Chicago.
We're going to let this set.
I'm rooting for the Bears. I want the Bears to go to the Super Bowl. I want them to win because that sets the bar high in the North Division.
John's rooting for them to move to Indiana. So, hey.
King of the North. King of the North. I don't care where they go. I love them. Yeah. They're the Bears.
Good. King of the North. Yeah. The Bears.
Tom Serafin, thanks for being here with us.
Thanks, Tom.
You're welcome. And pleasure. Happy New Year to you guys and all of your listeners all over the world.
Happy New Year, Tom.
And if you have a chance, please give my best to your brother who's, under a lot of stress day in and day out. But I have a lot of confidence in him. He's a smart guy, man. Ooh, man, smart guy.
Well, he's got a full plate.
Yeah. Wow.
For Tom Serafin, Serafin Associates, and now Mercury, Illinois. For his great wisdom, kindness, and common sense. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, my friend, baker of pies, friend of cats. And for me, John Cass, editor of John Cass News. Join us again next time, won't you, on another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.